I wrote about this in editorial already, so maybe some of the people have seen it. But one of the benefits of vanadium is that it isn't sexy. Because it isn't sexy, it never had to go through a lithium-type bubble. It never got over.
Right, the hype cycle.
There's no hype cycle. It never got overbought. It's just kind of this boring, bulky, inefficient technology that happens to have a perfectly suited application, which is like the fastest growing segment in the entire kind of battery universe, which is distributed energy storage. So, you know, if you want a solar farm, then you're going to need a battery. And vanadium is the best type of battery, end of story. So it's not that new. It's just becoming popular now for that application, because lithium used to dominate as it dominated everything. And now, you know, we're seeing more specialization.
So there are actual vanadium batteries already deployed?
Yeah, there are. Yeah, the company I'm covering will sell you one if you want. So
how much do they cost? A lot?
Yeah, I mean, they're expensive. They just got the Department of Energy funded like an 84 megawatt hour store capacity series of projects involving this company. They're going to supply the storage capacity. So it's for a company that's like 50 million market cap, this is a big deal.
Welcome to the Angel Research Podcast. My name is Jason Freert, and I'm here today with Alex Koifman. Welcome, Alex.
Thank you.
Back
again
to the show. This is the first time we are live on TikTok over there, in case anybody's watching us live.
Yeah. Interesting.
We should talk about that. Before we went live, I had to do an age verification where they took a selfie of me. And they confirmed that I was indeed old. I don't know what was up with that.
Yeah, I had that's actually an interesting topic. I've been, and for some reason this has been popping up more and more. Initially, a conversation with an ex-employee of Angel, but what's up with Zoomers aging worse than Millennials? Have you read about that at all?
Is that a thing?
Yeah, it's definitely a thing, and it's like a trend on YouTube now. Videos of Zoomers like complaining
about
being...
They just look really old.
Yeah, they're like saying people are taking me for like my mother's age, or they thought that my mother was my younger sister, and this guy was like 26 years old.
I wonder if it has to do with just like clothing styles, you know, and like haircut styles maybe.
Well, the two that I saw, one was a 22-year-old girl who her thing was she advertised fillers and all sorts of like facial augmentation type stuff. It wasn't out of control yet. She definitely looked older, but they were like, people were accusing her of being like 45, right? And she was getting really offended. And then there was another one where a dude was complete. He was like 26, and he had The Rock sign something at a signing event, and The Rock signed it to his son that didn't exist. And he was just like, I'm 26 years old. People think that I'm in my 40s, and I read an article about it. Like, it's actually true. They're starting to, the perceived age is now exceeding that of the previous generation, you guys, who apparently are aging better than anybody. I don't know about Gen Xers, but I guess we're just out of the picture at this point.
Yeah, well, I know I've seen going back where people will show pictures of people from like the 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. and they'll be like, this person's 42 years old, and they look like 50, 60.
Yeah.
So I think it was always trending. So maybe it just really trended down, and now it's sort of.
Those people fought World War II, though. So
right.
They have.
Yeah.
They
well,
have
there was
reasons.
Just a. There was a. I think there was a large degree of smoking going on that
sure.
I think just right. indoors, like everywhere, which, yeah. you know, can kind of lead to that. So on the TikTok front, though, it sounds like, and who knows, by the time, you know, maybe TikTok will be gone by the time this is
over. Yeah,
well,
I'm kind of like I'm a little hazy on the details here. So basically, the federal government said that they have to either sell this Chinese holding company needs to either sell the asset or get out of the American market by like middle of 2025, right?
So that's, basically, a year. Yeah, they have a year to divest. I think to an American entity.
Man. I mean, obviously, it wouldn't make any sense if they just went into another Chinese holding company and
right.
the same thing continued. So.
And they had basically come out, I guess they're fighting it legally, but saying that we're not going to do that, we'll just shut it down before we do that,
yeah.
which is kind of interesting, I guess. But what else would you say? Like, okay, you know, if you have a legal battle, you're not going to just come out and throw your hands up.
It kind of paints us a little bit in a negative light if we're doing stuff like that. You know, this is the free market that we've been sort of espousing for decades as the greatest thing ever. And we now have, you know, not arguably, definitely the most powerful government in the world that's dictating to assets, foreign assets, what they need to do. So
right. And they basically have thrown up their hands, and they basically know the influence and the data collection that is going on. Because they're not saying that to Facebook or Meta or whatever, or YouTube, that is likely collecting just as much data. Is that because basically they have deals with the government that's like, hey, we know you're getting this data, let us under the hood. But ByteDance is, you know, a Chinese affiliated. Sure. So they basically are like, yeah, the Chinese government has the same thing, but they can now spy on American citizens.
But the narrative is that they're actively trying to subvert our society, which is, we're just collecting data, you know, to learn more and to be more efficient, quote unquote, and to maybe sell some products. They're actually trying to, you know, get in there and rile things up a little bit. You know, basically, you know, do more.
Turning people trans.
Right now. Turning people trans, you know, just getting people to start protesting, you know, subvert society. This is, you know, the Yuri Bezmenov thing. I saw the Joe Rogan, if you.
Yeah, I've seen that. And he says, yeah, you start breaking down their society through, like, a long-term process.
Through indoctrination starting on the school system. So, you know, if TikTok is a stepping stone towards that, then that's, you know, I guess that's a justification that we have to.
Well, I have read or seen that the Chinese version of TikTok is very different, because they tend to show people doing, like, amazing things, right? Things that bring prestige, you know, performing well academically, athletically, you know, they kind of push the algorithm that way. Whereas
in here,
you know, certain things are pushed. Although maybe that's just a reflection of the society in general.
That's the market, you know,
right? Because you stay on a particular thing long enough, then they're like, oh, you like this, and they give you more of it.
Sure.
So I guess, do you think this opens the door? They basically have passed it and succeeded.
Yeah.
Is that opening the door for other stuff?
Well, I mean, you know, the U.S. government has been breaking up monopolies for over 100 years. So, I mean, opening the door to what? If they can bring criminal charges against a corporation, then they should obviously do that. What else are they opening the door to? What's the next sort of escalation, I would ask?
I guess a more isolationist sort of policy, where it's like, you can't operate in the U.S. unless you're a American.
Vetted by the federal government somehow.
Basically, yeah.
I mean, look, I think we live in a time where, unfortunately, information has the kind of impact where just letting it roam freely and get passed along freely and passed off as reality, passed off as, you know, legit news, I think that the liabilities there are too huge. It would be irresponsible to say that free information all the time, the chaos that it actually is a good thing. Because is it really? Humans don't do well with this, you know, just random delivery of information from a million different sources with, you know, questionable credibility, right? So
don't you think is a little bit of a – I mean, I think the spying aspect is what the government is going out with TikTok, but, are you know, then you get in the realm of, like, suppressing speech side of things. You think that people – yeah, there are some really – people, stupid people out there that are going to take what they see on social media mm-hmm. as fact and spread it around, and other people are going to be fooled and say, like, see, I told you that the lizard people, you know, are in the government. Don't you think eventually people will sort of wise up that say, hey, we, you know, you can't just read everything.
I'm waiting for that to happen. You know,
well, it's going
to
be a process.
Free speech has limitations. And, you know, the most famous example being incitement. You can't just, you know, scream fire in a theater. You can't start a riot. That's not part of free speech. Depriving others of their rights is not your right if you do it through speech. And if this incitement takes place electronically, then I know it's a slippery slope towards, you know, living in a controlled, oppressive society, but there also kind of needs to be a balance where you don't bombard young, extremely impressionable minds with straight up bullshit until they start believing it and that becomes their worldview, or at least balance it. At least make sure that the balance exists, and, you know, provide absurdity from the other end of the spectrum, if so required. But I don't think that's happening right now. Like we do have controlled free speech in this country already. It's not okay to say certain things, and it's society that's going to get you, not the government. It's society that's going to get you. And for some reason, we're perfectly fine with actual free speech being oppressed by other citizens. But when the government starts doing it, you know, it's immediately a cause for alarm. It's like a knee-jerk response. Is completely unfettered, chaotic free speech?
Well, because that's the First Amendment, right? The First Amendment is the government cannot fuck with free speech.
When the First
Amendment
was
written, institutions
did, you know, people make examples all the time with the Second Amendment, talking about how they didn't envision electrically powered Gatling guns back when they wrote that. Did they envision TikTok?
Yeah. Well, definitely not.
You know, I can.
So, do you think that these protests that are out there are, you know, a symptom of that, or is it just?
Well, I think that there are a lot of things at play. I think that the protests that you're referring to,
Colombia,
yes, and you know, all over the country and in parts of the world. I think that they consist. It's probably like a 90-10 split. 90% being people who really have no idea what they're supporting and what they're so angry about. And one of the modern diseases, I believe, social diseases that we've sort of invented is that outrage is kind of like, you know, it's like a currency. And you need to have as much of it as you can, no matter who you are, derive it from whatever sources you can. So I think 90% of them don't know what River to the Sea means. They don't know what that implies. They don't know what the end result of, you know, the people, the end goals of the people who came up with that are. And then they have 10% who know exactly what they're saying and exactly what they want, and they know exactly what they're doing. And those are terrifying people that, well, I'm not going to get into what I would do with them personally, but I think that 10% is definitely weaponizing the other 90%, for sure. And they know what they're doing. They've done it before. Except that now, you know, it's turbocharged with social media. It's turbocharged. Back in the 90s, you know, you had to rely on network news and CNN to bring you images that are now just like, you know, being broadcast by phone, you know, from 1,000 different sources. So, yeah, I think it's definitely playing into it. None of those people see the balance. They don't see the complexity of the situation at all. They've picked the target, and that's it. They're going after it, and they're saying whatever they can to produce whatever emotional response they can. So, I think it's horrible. I think it's the opposite of enlightenment. I think these people are the opposite of educated. They're just loud. That's all they are. You're supposed to be listening in school, not talking. I'm sorry, but that's what you're supposed to be doing. Once you've formulated your opinions and your brain is matured, then go out and talk for the rest of your life. But in school, there's a reason that there's a person at the head of the class talking and everyone else is sitting and listening, and that's not happening.
Yeah, that's an interesting, and it doesn't seem like it's going to get any better anytime soon.
No, because young, and look, every generation goes through this, but now it's reached like this point of absurdity. Young people think they know more about everything than older people. And I used to be one of those people. Now I'm transitioning over to the other end of the spectrum, and I'm just like, oh my God, was I really this big of a fucking asshole for that long? And thank God it wasn't at a time when I could have memorialized my stupidity forever, for all generations to come.
So if TikTok truly goes away, is that a play that's good for Meta, right? And Google.
yeah, getting back to the topic. Yeah, sure. I'm not sure what the market share, what the respective market shares are of, you know, YouTube and TikTok, but, you know, is there a huge difference in, you know, interface and experience between YouTube Shorts and TikTok?
I don't know what the market share is. I know TikTok is growing. They're all growing. It's just a matter of, but you have to think the amount of hours that are spent on that app just in the U.S. if it goes away, they've got to go somewhere, right? Maybe they'll go to books.
Yeah, maybe.
No, I don't think so.
Let's make that call.
Yeah. All right. So switching gears a little bit. The election's coming up. How much are you paying attention to or sitting pat waiting to see what happens in terms of deploying capital in the markets? Or are the stuff you're looking at sort of agnostic to who's in the, you know, in power, so to speak?
Well, the stuff that I'm into, most interested in and am into, I think it is fairly agnostic. I think it's happening no matter what. I have a suspicion that another Trump administration may do something good for the markets, at least initially.
Right.
They might be like a shot of meth or something. I mean, who knows? You know, like you saw what happened with this IPO. So, I'm not really sitting around. I'm kind of already deployed. I'm really waiting for the other shoe to drop on a number of different things. You know, we have a lot of geopolitical stuff going on. We've already kind of touched on it, but just stuff that needs to sort of come to a resolution. And I was hoping that they, you know, instead of having to deal with all of them at once, you know, like two wars, two, you know, potentially significant conflicts going on in different parts of the world simultaneously, and the election. I was hoping they'd kind of would come one after another, but all at the same time. It doesn't really make me, if I were a big retail investor that was, you know, looking to deploy a bunch of cash, I don't know if right now would be the time to be doing that. I would probably wait at least for some resolution somewhere.
Right. That's, and you think that could be closer to the election or after?
Well, the election will likely cause a domino effect, at least with Ukraine. I would say it may. If Trump wins, then there may be a big rethinking in Kiev as far as, you know, how they're going to proceed.
Right.
And if they are going to even consider cutting their losses, because so far that dialogue has been pretty much, you know, one-sided. He's like, no conversation until you're off our property, period.
Right.
Which, you know, is understandable. But, yeah, I'm thinking that the election might trigger some resolutions. We'll have to see.
A couple of years, actually, I guess it was about 18 months ago, you were on here talking about graphene, which is interesting. It's still been one of the most popular topics on the YouTube channel. You mentioned some other sort of name. Would you classify graphene as like a nano? Like what type of? It's a nanostructure.
A nanostructure, right. Meaning that in one dimension at least, it's only the thickness of a molecule.
Right.
And so,
okay.
So you can't get any thinner, physically, and remain what it is.
Right.
So yeah, do I consider it?
It's nanotechnology.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, okay. It's, you know, it's man-made, so it's a technology. It's, you know, engineered on a nanoscopic scale. So yes, I do. It's the story is gaining momentum. They're finding new applications for it all the time. Something that I think is potentially cool is biotech.
Yeah.
Because apparently it has the ability to resist immunoresponse, right? So that's
well, one of the comments of, in fact, quite a few of the comments on your video are saying that graphene was or is in the vaccine. Is that accurate? I know you're not Dr. Fauci over here.
Yeah. I mean, have you vetted the? Have you?
No. I just read the comments. I'm just like everybody else.
I don't know. I've never heard that before.
Yeah. Okay.
But, you know, I'm not Dr. Fauci, and I don't. But I don't know why.
But you just said there's applications for graphene.
Yeah, for like implants and stuff.
Okay, so you're talking about, you know, yeah, like a stint.
So if it has like a, an innate immunosuppressive effect. That means that we can, well, actually, the immune response only comes for other organic implants. Like if you get like a pig heart, for example, you might get a, your body might reject it. Your body isn't going to reject like a titanium implant, for example. What it might do is it might form a clot around it. But graphene apparently has the ability to deal with all of these issues if it's engineered properly. So I think that plus being as small as it is, it's possible that we might start building, you know, actually machines on that scale, which can do a whole lot of great things in the body. I know that sounds really scary to some people, but, you know.
Well, look.
Clean out your arteries.
Yeah, I follow the UFO topic or UAP topic, uh-huh. and graphene is always kind of brought up when they talk about what are known as metamaterials that may have been recovered from particular crashes and stuff like that. So
when did this one, which crash gave us graphene? I'm
well, I don't,
what the theory is there.
I don't have the specifics regarding that, but I mean, the biggest lore is fiber optics, you know, from these other ones. But it seems like there's more and more of these sort of nano metamaterial structures being, I don't want to say invented.
I mean, you know, we're not doing so badly technology-wise either, you know, here on Earth. We're developing, you know, pretty rapidly. The official story on graphene is that it was discovered in, like, 2004, and important research began in, like, 2010. Well, no, sorry. In 2012, there was a Nobel Prize awarded to its two principal researchers. And so it was, like, twice the cost of gold to produce back then, and it's just it's dropped to the point where graphene coating is almost like an industrial process now. So it's gotten almost casual. So, you know, you're going to start seeing it everywhere, just like, you know, one point silicon was the same way. So plastic before that. So it's not.
Graphene's the new plastic?
I mean, maybe, yeah, sure. It's super versatile. It's man-made. It doesn't occur naturally. I don't know why I have to give aliens credit for it, but, you know, it seems kind of unimpressive, actually, if, you know, a civilization that, you know, surpassed light speed and they just gave us graphene, you know, that's all we got.
Well, I think we got other stuff, too.
Like what? Where are the ray guns?
Yeah.
Where are the ray guns? Well, still using M16s.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So.
They're coming. They're coming. So are there any other what's got you most excited at this point in that space or other space?
Well, I'm always big on batteries. We talked about vanadium batteries last time. So, you know, I'm still like that. Vanadium batteries are one of those kind of boring, not very sexy investments that happen to make a lot of sense. And I wrote about this in editorial already, so maybe some of the people have seen it, but one of the benefits of vanadium is that it isn't sexy. Because it isn't sexy, it never had to go through a lithium-type bubble. It never got over.
Right, the hype cycle.
There's no hype cycle. It never got overbought. It's just kind of this boring, bulky, inefficient technology that happens to have a perfectly suited application, which is like the fastest-growing segment in the entire kind of battery universe, which is distributed energy storage. So, you know, if you want a solar farm, then you're going to need a battery, and vanadium is the best type of battery, end of story. So it's not that new, it's just becoming popular now for that application, because lithium used to dominate as it dominated everything, and now, you know, we're seeing more specialization.
So there are actual vanadium batteries already deployed?
Yeah, there are. Yeah, the company I'm covering will sell you one if you want. So
how much do they cost? A lot?
Yeah, I mean, they're expensive. They just got the Department of Energy funded like an 84 megawatt hour store capacity series of projects involving this company. They're going to supply the storage capacity. So it's for a company that's like 50 million market cap, this is a big deal.
It's not a fly-by-night bullshit. Yeah, so it's still has a lot of growth potential
A lot of potential, and again, it was never overhyped. Nobody gave a damn about vanadium 2 years ago, and they kind of still don't, but it's coming. So if you want to be smart about it.
Yeah, and that's usually the time to get in. Sometimes it's not like hey, you're going to buy this, and then next week it goes up. Like, oftentimes...
That's the dream, but...
Right, but oftentimes we're just early, right?
Yeah.
We're early. And I don't even like the phrase too early now, because it's like, what do you mean? Like, you'd rather be too early than too late, right? And the big gains come from...
Too early may mean you lost 75% before it doubled, too, so that's...
Well, yeah. But it does mean that you don't miss that huge run-up when ultimately it comes out.
I think I like for this one, I kind of like the idea of a slow, gradual run-up that lasts for years.
Yeah.
So I think that's realistic, and it's not a stressful investment. It's not something that's going to get you super excited, which should be the first sign that it's a good idea.
Okay.
You know?
I like that. And you mentioned, what was the other thing we talked about before we went?
Oh, well, there's Nano. Yeah, we kind of...
is that skating. Is that particularly graphene is something else?
No, because they do more processes. So they develop, sintering. Do you know about...
No.
So a sintering is, it's almost like 3D printing using metallic powders. And so what they do is that they can create shapes by applying heat and pressure that overall much, much less energy investment than melting something down and casting it. And so, plus it can be much more precise.
Okay.
Like precise on a nanoscopic level. And so this company,
it sounds like how you would build an alien spacecraft.
Right, right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so now they've unveiled that. So you don't really hear much. The first sintering story I read, I think, was in like 2015. And of course it happened because some guy sintered a 45 automatic completely. Like, he made a gun with a metal barrel that could withstand 20,000 pounds per square inch of pressure, which gun barrels have to withstand. And so, you know, you can't 3D print a gun just because, specifically because of that. You have to make, you can make almost all components out of plastic, but there are pressure bearing parts of it that you have to go with metal. And he made a 45 that was just completely, every single part was made using sintering. And, you know, and you have to be hyper precise also. So
right.
It works, right? And of course he did that, and there was an uproar, but it got into the news. That was like back in the maybe 2016. So,
but I mean, what did he obviously had some like sophisticated equipment.
Yeah, it was like $1 million worth of equipment. Yeah. It wasn't like, no idiot in his basement is going to be doing this.
Right.
But it's been around, but now it's, you know, again, it's getting cheap and effective and commonplace enough that it's like all cool technologies, it's just becoming more and more sort of an option. So this company does that. They also do, they produce powders cryogenically. So I don't know if you've heard of this at all. They basically cool down some sort of block of whatever. It can be even a metal. Usually it's some sort of ceramic. They cool it down to like negative 280 degrees, and then they run it through a machine that just breaks it up into tiny, tiny little nanoscopic particles, the finest powder ever. And they can use that powder also. That's, you know, that powder would go into things like sintering and also coating, making alloys. And
okay.
So yeah, nanotechnology is the theme.
They freeze it, I guess, because the molecules,
it becomes
like
more brittle. Everything crystallizes, and so in a crystallized form, things are easier to break. They tend to come apart in a more predictable manner than when they're at their room temperature state.
Interesting. So they're producing that, and then you use that in the sintering or manufacturing.
That's one of the things you can
process.
Do. Yeah, or in manufacturing alloys for clients based on whatever needs they have. So, yeah, it's cool. It's not super duper sexy. It's not like they're injecting people with nanobots and they're, you know, making supermen. That's not really where we're at, but again, it's a kind of interesting story. I think it's at the beginning right now, and it's going to become more of an industrial process.
Yeah, I think with, you know, the rise of AI, so to speak, and things like NVIDIA and chips and like software, people tend to not be focused on the actual physical elements out there that need to be done to create this new world that is, you know, coming, right? You can scale out software to do like AI stuff, but to actually make it interact with the physical world, you're going to need these materials and new processes in order to make
step.
It happen.
That's the next step.
It sounds like something you could build a robot with.
that came on a spaceship?
No, I didn't say that.
Well, that's kind of cool. You seen the new Atlas? Have you seen like?
Yeah, but it was only like a 20-second clip, right?
Well, it's where it was laying on the ground and then yeah, stood and it up just really gets creepy.
Up. Yeah. But it's also it looks smaller
because
and
there's
like
no hydraulics anymore. It's all electrical.
Right.
I think it's pretty sweet. I would definitely have one in my house.
Yeah. Well, how much is that going to be?
Well, I mean, back in the mid-50s, a TV cost like $15,000 in today's money. So.
Yeah. So in Elon's in that space. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that.
That's weird. I don't know if I want, because then you have like, I mean, Elon puts a lot of his own little touches into all of his products, like, you know, the Tesla's fart, right? I don't know if you want that in your house.
Well, what's he going to build into your?
I don't know. It'll like, I just don't even want to imagine that. But it's a pretty dark.
You think it's going to fart on you?
At best, you know.
Well, yeah, I'm certainly excited. The interesting thing is that the latest the self-driving updates is supposedly pretty good. I don't know.
Is that where you want self-driving capabilities to be?
Like, pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, I think they've it's already been pretty good, but this leap is to the point where, you know, they're giving out free trials to it because they're convinced that people are going to. You know, it's like ChatGPT, like it was like kind of free and then, you know, it just.
I just, like how they managed to negotiate the American legal system with that invention is just mind-boggling to me. Because, like, what happens if two Teslas, both autonomous, crash into each other? Or what happens if a Tesla crashes into an autonomous Chevy? Who is getting the lawsuit here? How do you decide who's getting the lawsuit?
Well, I think it's the insurance companies.
Well, yeah, the insurance company is going to want to indemnify the situation. So right. Who's the insurance company going to sue to get their money back?
The interesting thing about insurance, particularly car insurance, is that it was up 28% in the latest CPI report. And they're basically saying because these cars are so more electronic now, that
they're more dangerous?
Not that they're more dangerous. They cost more to repair.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know. You're familiar with my incident with my truck.
Right. That was an AI situation? Well, it was an AI.
That's what I blamed it on. They just took over. But there was so many sort of sensors and software. Like they at multiple times they had to bring it to – you know, Dodge or Chrysler or whatever the thing is to get it, like, I don't know, recertified, calibrated using some software. And it was like, you know, 8 hours of work with that. And they had to bring it back and they had to
check.
That's
what makes it expensive.
Right.
Because otherwise manufacturing would be in line with that same increase. And it's not. You know, manufacturing is still pretty reasonable. So
Right. So they're starting to see that impact on the repairs, and then also just the time, you know, the time frame too on there. So
well, maybe they'll, you know, they'll cost more to repair, but there'll be fewer repairs to make.
Well, I think that's the hope. But I think now we're in the point where we haven't quite gotten there. So there's still a significant number of accidents and situations.
It's only
that
a matter of time
repair.
Before they're better than human drivers.
Yeah. When do you think that is? What's your prediction on the? On the singularity, are you ever going to own a driverless car?
When my son starts driving, I will.
Yeah,
because he's going to be driving one.
Yeah,
he's going to be riding in one.
Yeah.
So, but he's 2.5. let me think. When is that going to happen? I mean, the singularity specifically. Like, you want like a general singularity event. Date or when autonomous cars will be better than people?
Yeah. Well, I should say, when do you think there will be more autonomous cars than on the road?
More autonomous capable cars
than driver cars.
Well, so by 2029, apparently all cars, at least in this country, are going to have autonomous braking capabilities. That's mandated already. So
okay,
90% of cars already do.
I was gonna say that's just like the sense it like you
I'm
know
saying it's coming and it's gonna be probably pretty fast. I think that once people stop. Well, they're thinking about putting tractor trailer, autonomous tractor trailers on the road. I think when that starts happening, the people are just going to start getting used to the fact that, you know, this is the new normal. And then I'll just say the end of the decade. It'll probably already have come and gone.
All right.
So
we're gonna rewind and evaluate your prediction in 10 years.
Rewind. That word won't even exist. Probably.
Yeah, people don't even know what rewind means. Yeah, people don't even know what rewind means.
They don't even hold, like...
Sarah, do you know what rewind means?
Yeah, like with a VHS.
Oh, yeah, okay. She's not that young.
I mean, being young is always a positive thing. Well, unless you're protesting at college, sorry.
All right, well, that's a good place to end it. Thanks, Alex. Is there any parting words you want to have? Like, comment and like and subscribe and all that to our stuff.
You do that really well, though.
Yeah, no, I don't. I forgot to do it in the middle because I think by now everybody's tuned out.
Comment, like, and subscribe.
Yeah, and we'll link out some of your articles that you wrote on vanadium and all that,
right on.
And for people to check it out. And you write for Wealth Daily as well. Is that correct? Or Energy and Capital?
No, only EAC now.
Only Energy and Capital.
That's right.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, you sometimes can check in on Wealth Daily, but most of the time on Energy and Capital. Gotcha. All right. So long to TikTok.